Welcome to Dungeons and Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Get a little more casual today.
I was gonna say a little
more laid back.
NPR feel.
A little 80s.
Can we get some jazz interludes?
No, we already got the Stranger Things theme song. So no, we cannot. But we're here today to talk about season 2. Obviously we're a week out now from the release, and I don't know about you, Aaron, but I am super excited.
Yeah.
Season 1 of Stranger Things was maybe my favorite show of last year. I can't remember what the Baldies were giving it, but
I love that show. It made noise.
It sure did, yeah. And all the actors did too, and it was easily one of my favorite shows of last year.
And I'm expecting
season 2 to be the same.
What always makes, I think it's also got the secret sauce of being a surprise. Like, yeah. Nobody was looking for Stranger Things. Like, as soon as you heard about it, it's like, oh, you know, the Stephen King-ish thing with kids and all that. Mm-hmm. Like Steven Spielberg kind of thing. Like, it's, and then it delivers the goods almost from the first frame. Yeah, and that's one of the best parts about covering any kind of pop culture, when something kind of blindsides you and completely outstrips any of your expectations for it.
Yeah, it certainly did that for me.
Which brings us to season 2. Mm-hmm. Where you wonder, without that secret sauce, you know, we talked about, I think, in over the course of our season 1 retrospective, you know, all the things are stacked up against this season, right? The fact that people are expecting great things.
Yeah,
the fact
it's got
that
hype.
The Duffer Brothers had years to polish the script and ship it around, and now, you know, they've got to follow that up in less than a year's time.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, with this kind of story and mythology, we've seen it before in like X-Files and Lost, where, you know, these sci-fi supernatural things can kind of get away of creators.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the reasons to be optimistic are?
It's Stranger Things. You know, they nailed it in season 1, and as much as you have faith in everyone involved in the project that they can pull it off again, I guess you should be excited. Certainly there are things to, I think, you know, worry about potentially, but until we see it, I'm still on board the hype train.
Yeah, and I think I said this in the over the course of the rewatch too, the fact that the cast is so good, that you've got this really good young cast, and you've got a really good adult cast too. That's half the battle. If you got good characters and people that can really live and inhabit those characters, then, you know, it seems like storytelling is a lot easier, because that's plot is easier than believable character development.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it so much easier when you have actors that, you know, just really embody those characters and behave in natural, believable, realistic ways. You get a lot of that stuff just for free, just by having those. And so I feel like that's one of the biggest reasons to be optimistic. And also, I feel like the trailers were pretty hot.
Well, yeah, let's move on to those in a second. But that was, you mentioned the cast and how these kids just feel so natural in these roles. That was maybe the biggest thing that drew me to the show in season 1. They had this interesting supernatural plot going on, but I feel like the core of it just felt so natural. And you don't lose that in season 2, right? All that stuff is continued over, because they at one point were thinking about making this an anthology,
right?
Which I think would have been a huge mistake.
Yeah, why?
Because you lose all of the built-up characters,
yes,
and all of those relationships you have with your audience. It would have been a foolish move, in my opinion.
Yeah, because all the expectations would still be there, but the anthology, where you have to just turn that around and it's a new story, and new, unless you do the Ryan Murphy thing where, you know, you just take the same four kids and put them in California this time, or Seattle.
Okay.
And say they're now Brutus and Ike and
yeah, they could have
Buster.
Done it,
yeah.
But a much harder challenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of the things to be, you know, hyped about and optimistic about going into it.
Sure.
Okay, so what did you think of the season 2 trailer?
The other thing I was going to say is optimistic, because I've heard a lot of interviews with the Duffer Brothers.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, you listen to, like, a Nick Pizzolatto between seasons 1 and 2 of True Detective, like, oh, this guy might have bought into his press a little bit. this guy seems like he has all the answers. That's scary. These guys have been pretty upfront about, like, yes, we are terrified about following up a season one. Like, we, you know, like, it's something that we are spending a lot of time and energy and sweat to make sure that we don't let people down. And we know how easy it would be to do so. Like, that's what I like to hear, a healthy skepticism and fear of your own abilities, because that's what makes you, that's what keeps you from getting lazy and complacent, right?
And they talk about, like, not really knowing, you know, having a vision for the show, but not really knowing that it was going to be this huge hit, right? Like, they talk about how so many things can get lost in the shuffle of, of modern television.
And yeah.
They didn't know what they had. And it, you know, in as much as they keep the same attitudes going into this of, like, we're making a show that we love and want to make, I think they'll be okay. And they've talked about also the writing process and how absolutely important that is to a production. Whereas you can, you know, you can write what you think is all right and then say, okay, we're going to really polish this up during filming and during editing.
Right.
They have the exact opposite approach. Let's polish this thing up while we're writing it, because it's the easiest phase to do it in.
Damn right.
Which makes so much sense.
Yep.
So I'm excited.
What do you want to talk about the trailers?
Yeah.
I was impressed that it, the thing that struck me from watching the trailers most is how much larger in scope things are. Like, you've got, it's almost like the third act of Hellboy, where Cthulhu shit, like ancient gods are awakening and coming out of the sky and starting Armageddon. I was kind of, before I started seeing the trailers, I figured that there'd be another exploration of the Upside Down, and you'd have maybe several Demogorgons, or, like, you know, we've attracted attention of Demogorgon HQ, and they're sending reinforcements. I never thought that they were going to go Ragnarok on us.
Yeah, no, they went huge. You can see in one of the trailers, there's this, I'm going to call it War of the Worlds sky spider. I don't even know what it is, but
it's
very
Cthulhu-esque, Lovecraftian. Sure. Yeah. And the fact that the other thing is, like, you're talking about the Baldies, which is our kind of, like, tongue-in-cheek award show we do in January of every year, and we collectively gave, I think, secondary honors, maybe, to, like,
all four
kids. The silver we gave to all four kids, and I kind of joked about, like, whether the guy who plays Will should have been included in that because he's such a small part of season one. I feel like that the Duffer brothers are kind of cognizant of that, and it seems like they're building a lot of this season around Will and the fact that he's torn between these two worlds still because of his lengthy exposure to the Upside Down, and he's getting these messages from the other side, these visions of potential future that's going to be... because it does seem like they're going to spend a lot of this season without Eleven.
Mm-hmm.
One of my standing complaints about the goddamn trailers is, like, in my perfect world, I don't think we'd have seen Eleven in any of these trailers.
Yeah, me too.
Because why?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It just spoils the reveal that she's still alive.
And I mean, of course she's going to be. I mean, the fact that they hinted with the Tupperware and the Eggos, like, that
there's a difference between knowing and knowing.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I know for a fact that Elle will be on screen in this season two.
But, like, it could be halfway through the season before she actually makes it through, because it just feels like that Will is kind of going to be that Eleven character, that maybe he's gotten some special powers, or, you know, just maybe because he's got the foot in both worlds, he's going to be special. I like the fact that he kind of got short. He kind of drew the short straw last year as far as screen time and development.
He did. Yeah.
Although, in retrospect, he was in this episodes a lot more with flashbacks and, like, you know, being stuck in the Upside Down. But yeah, I like the fact that he's going to be, it seems like a much more of a centerpiece character.
Yeah, he's definitely going to have a lot more screen time. The thing that I'm worried about for him is he's going to miss out on yet another big adventure with his friends, because it was apparent to me that he is going to be, you know, the kid who's zoning out and the kid who's drawing weird things, and his mom is going to go, uh-oh, we need to take him to the doctors. And they take him to the doctors. And I don't know how long he spends there, but you can see several shots of him, you know, in a lab being studied. You can see all of the other kids in class except for him, and Mike's kind of looking at his desk with a sad expression, his empty desk. I'm hoping that Will doesn't get shortchanged in the friend adventure, like his D&D campaign, you know?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about, like, does his mom actually take him to the doctors, or is this another Department of Energy kind of goon squad? Because if I'm Joyce, And they've always hinted at her kind of like backstory of being, you know, having mental problems and whatnot. And I think there's actually a brief scene where we see her getting electroshock therapy.
We see somebody. I'm not sure.
I thought it was her.
I thought it was maybe what's her name? Who's Jane's mom? Who's Eleven's mom?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I it could have been her too. I couldn't quite tell because the lights were so bright it kind of oversaturated her features, so I couldn't tell if it was I couldn't tell if it was a younger version, if it's supposed to suggest a younger version of Joyce or Terry. But like, I have a hard time believing that the mom who is this mixed up with secret government agencies would take her child exhibiting strange phenomenon to the authorities. Like,
I don't know. So,
I mean, I get it, like, if he had flu or if he just has a cold, but like, hey, my son's having visions of an upside down apocalypse. Here, take a look at him. I'm wondering if he's not, you know, there's more of a nefarious kind of government goon squad after him.
It could be, but I mean, I don't know. So there's a lot of stuff to consider here, I guess. So Sean Astin is, or Austin, I don't know how you say his name. Astin, I think.
I like ass. He puts the ass in Astin.
He does. Yeah. He's apparently going to be in this season. We see him in a couple of shots.
Yeah.
In the previews. And
in a white lab coat.
Yeah, he's in scrubs. And that's kind of where I'm going, is at some point we see both him and Joyce in scrubs. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to take place in 1984, which is like a year out, roughly. Halloween of 1984, right?
Yep.
That's like a year out. I don't think that Joyce has time to get any like certifications or licenses or anything to become like a nurse or a doctor or a dentist or whatever she might be wearing scrubs. But she might be an assistant at one of those places because I don't think you need much certification to do that. And in a year, I think she could certainly like get a new job, right? Like, she's got a family to support. She's working at this store. I think maybe she might be interested in a new job.
But we also speculated that Hopper might have been co-opted or recruited by the government agency that's doing all this.
And it might show a shot of him listening to, like, tape recorders.
Right.
That are, like, reel-to-reel tape recorders.
Right. And I'm running my speculation based on my own speculation.
Yeah.
But the one thing I could see around that is if Hopper would approach Joyce and be like, look, things have changed. I'm involved now. And there's got, you know, like, I look at the Sean Astin guy. He's got a friendly face. He's not.
But I think they might be dating is the thing, because there's a shot where, Joyce is trying to get to the bed or something in the hospital room. Or wherever she is, and Sean Astin is, like, holding her back, not in, like, a restrain her kind of way, but sort of, like, in a restraining hug is how I read it.
Oh, you think Sean Astin
they maybe are dating. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
That's my guess.
Which trailer did you like better?
I absolutely loved the Thriller trailer. Loved it. Thought it was perfect. Set the mood exactly.
Yeah. My only criticism.
Seeing the kids in the Ghostbusters outfits is perfect.
Yeah. Heck yeah. I mean, my only criticism of the first trailer is that it did show off Eleven. What's the second trailer does
no, it
in
did.
Spades. No, I'm saying that's my only criticism.
Oh, that it
is
did.
It showed,
okay. Yeah, yeah.
It showed Eleven like punching through from the
upside so
down to the middle school.
Out.
Yeah. But yeah, when they kick in the Thriller trailer,
oh man,
and then ending
got
with
Steve
Vincent
dancing
Price
at a party, and it's perfect.
It's really good, and it felt like, you know, with the Ghostbusters reference and a trick or treating, and like the Reagan election signs, it really felt. And then with the Michael Jackson Thriller, it felt like like something out of a time capsule from 1984.
Right, the arcade, the Dragon's Lair, like
shit.
All
oh
that.
Fuck, I forgot about the Dragon's Lair shit. Do you think that Dragon's Lair is going to be the new way for the kids to understand the universe?
Oh, it might be through their video games instead of like the movies.
Right, like that. There's I wonder if there'll be some kind of like path they have to memorize, because that's what the dragons.
Right.
It wasn't anything about reflexes. It's essentially memorizing routes and putting inputs in at the appropriate time, and because they make a big deal out of kind of that in that trailer, and I wonder if there'll be, because that's what we kind of marveled at, is how well like the boys are able to interpret their world through the lens of role-playing games, and Dungeons & Dragons in particular. and how that, like, even though that's ridiculous.
And, like, Star Wars and...
Yeah. Even though that's ridiculous, it actually works really well. Mm-hmm. I get to see Dustin's like, you guys, this is like when we're trying to sneak past the acidic slime goo and...
Right.
You gotta go left, left, then right. Alive. Yeah.
Yeah. And you all distracted me and the dragon burnt me up.
Right.
Yeah, that could be cool.
And well, the second trailer is... I mean, the second trailer definitely... adds a little bit more urgency and a big and to the scope and scale, but it just didn't feel like that, like fresh out of a time capsule. Oh my God, look right. at these kids.
I think the worst thing you can say about the second trailer is it wasn't necessary. Mm. And that maybe it ruins the mood a little bit, or it brings down the mood going into season two.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because I would have left the mood dial set at Thriller.
Yeah.
A week before the thing, like yeah, drop that and get totally. Everybody hyped and then into season two.
Yeah, because I remember when it came out last week, it's like, man, if I were a marketing team at Netflix, I would have taken 30 seconds out of this mm-hmm. and have like a real jump, like what the fuck cut of it, and just released it back when the first trailer came out and yeah. saved the second trailer for the week before it releases because it's just so fucking hype.
Yeah.
Height. I took hot and I mixed it with hype and I didn't know which to go with, so I tried to jam in both. Didn't yeah. exactly work.
No, I'm with you. I don't think the second trailer was quite as good, but, you know, it was still good. Still good. So, I don't know. I'm trying to piece together some of the plot, I guess, from these trailers
okay.
of season two. Obviously, Elle comes back from the upside down. She's got the Eggos that Hopper's left her. We see that right away, and she appears to be using her powers and still bleeding from the nose.
She seems to be angry. She seems to have some longer curly hair too.
Yeah,
is that a wig?
I don't know. It's the color of her hair.
Yeah,
her real hair. I think
it looks very like a Mike Brady kind of.
It does.
Like,
it looks bad. Certainly,
it's not great. It's not great.
Is she trying to look like a boy? Is she going for that look, the Arya look?
I don't know. Yeah, the Ari. Mm-hmm. The other thing I noticed is that there might be some unconventional pairings of the children. Like, it looks like Steve and, like, Dustin are palling around. And, like, I kind of excited about seeing different combinations of these kids.
Yeah.
And there's a new girl in town.
Uh-huh.
One of those redheads you got to watch out for.
Uh-huh.
Wonder how they're going to mix that into the group.
I don't know. Like, she walks in and all the boys are turning their heads, so...
Right, and that's
I assume they've all got a crush on her, and it's going to be, like, L turned up to 11.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, that's what I was about to say, is that, like, the thing that defines all of these kids is they're misfits and losers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, L's literally a lab experiment that's very poorly socialized. Mm-hmm. You know, Lucas, Mike, Will, and Dustin are all some version of social pariahs and nerds and weirdos at school, which probably means they're going to be super successful and awesome adults. But for the meantime, life sucks. And then the new girl seems like a much more conventional, you know, popular kid. And how mm-hmm. will she get sucked into their orbit?
Yeah, potentially. I don't know. She clearly does. At one point, I think we can see her rolling barrels down a hill with Steve and Lucas and Mike, maybe, or Dustin. I don't know.
Well, that's best friend territory if you're rolling barrels together.
Yeah. You don't just roll barrels with anybody.
No, hell no.
Also, I guess the monster in this is coming after everyone else, not Will this time. So
how do you wait? Is that
that's
is something
Will
read
says.
Or oh okay,
no, it's
okay.
something he says in the trailer. Like somebody says, "What does it want?" And Will says, "Not me, everyone else."
Hmm.
Now that could just be an out of context pairing of two lines that
but
don't
if
go
he's
together.
If he's turned into a Play-Doh fun slug factory for colonizing, maybe the creatures already see him as a beachhead.
Yeah,
so they're going after everybody else.
Yeah, it's clear that the Demogorgon gave the Upside Down a taste for the real world.
Uh-huh.
So here comes Sky Spider.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It looks like it's going to be more epic than season one was.
There's a couple things
about.
Like I wonder if they're going to get away with. Like it looks like at one point the boys trap something supernatural in their presumably fake.
Yeah,
ghost trap.
Which
like
is awesome.
It's rattling on the table, and I mean, how are they going to keep stretching the bounds of like shit? That I mean, are they going to go full Stephen King where they're attacking Pennywise the Clown with their fucking you know, asthma inhalers, and because it got this weird dream kid logic, but it seems like it's much more grounded in science and reality. So, like, you know, like,
well, we know that the upside down affects electronics, right?
Right.
In some way,
right?
When the monsters are around, so I think that that toy, if I remember correctly, like opened up and made sounds. So,
oh, you think they had the licensed Ghostbuster trap toy?
I think so. It looked like it to me, but
okay.
I'm not sure.
I thought it looked like something homemade.
Maybe. Maybe. As long as there are electronics in it, I would be willing to buy it.
The Demogorgon, that some sort of Demigorgish, because it's not even a Demigorgon now. It's some sort of Demigorgish power can be contained within it.
Yeah.
Huh.
Or that it would be affected by the presence of a monster.
Okay.
From the upside down.
All right. What else we want to talk about?
I don't know that there's much more. Like I said, I'm super excited for season two. We're going to be covering it pretty much as soon as we can when it comes out. So I think Friday we're planning on covering two or three episodes. I don't know if we've made that call yet, but there are 9 episodes this season, so one extra, which means we can do 3 on Friday, 3 on Saturday, and 3 on Sunday and have it all out ready for people to binge and listen to the podcast by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, it seems like a goal that we can hit.
Yeah.
So we are going to have all the coverage before Monday morning, or by Monday morning, uploaded and ready to consume. It's going to be very similar to the format we did, which we got a lot of praise for. In fact, I think that
on what?
What we did for season one, like, people really liked, because one of the criticisms when we don't do a full recap is people like, it's hard to, you know, listen to a podcast without the full recap if you're a little fuzzy on the details yourself.
Yeah, and I think especially with binging, it's important to have some kind of recap.
Yeah, so people know, like, oh, yes, it's that episode. Yeah. Where, like, you know, when you have the full recap, it's like, oh, you can you know enough that, like, as people are discussing, you can kind of ground your ideas in there. So I feel like that this is a great middle way that we have these brief synopsises that, like, ground people in the episode, and then we do the analysis. And moving forward, to the extent that we, you know, some shows we don't do the full recap because for whatever reason, I think this is a great way to move forward with that format, to just do the mini reviews, because then you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, for the stuff that we have to cover really quickly.
Yeah, because like there are people that don't like the full recap because it's like, I just watched the episode. Why do I want to hear you guys just break down the scene?
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like this is a way to make everybody happy. And that's what we're going to – that's the format we're going to be going forward with in season two. And then after all is said and done, like, the week after, we will have a wrap-up podcast that we talk about our overall thoughts and hopefully consider some of the feedback we're going to be getting. By the way, send that into StrangerThings@baldmove.com. Now, I did screw up the email redirect, and I just discovered this yesterday, so we do not have a ton of feedback. As much as I was hoping over season one, other than a lot of people saying they enjoyed it and they enjoyed our coverage, essentially we have one piece of feedback. Do we have anything you want to talk about before we get to that?
No, I think we're ready.
All right, here we go. StrangerThings@baldmove.com, and send that in at any point, and we'll just all stitch it together and have a big old discussion of it after season two has been complete. Justin E. from Morehead City in North Carolina. Just rewatched the series, and my son has been super into nature docs lately. So we were watching one of those shows when it got to the deep ocean episode. I didn't expect this, but I actually saw the upside down. That's stupid, I know, but listen. Everyone calls that stuff falling from the sky ash or snow, but it could be more like the marine snow that falls in the deep ocean. All that dead and decaying organic matter that takes weeks to drift down to those monsters down there. I thought this was a pointless connection until I looked at all the water imagery in the show. Here we are in landlocked Hawkins, but we have Hopper who lives on the water, Will's body being pulled out of the water, quote-unquote, Barb's blood dripping into the water, Eleven's powers amplified through water, along with Nancy and Johnson's correct theory that blood calls the monster like a shark. It's kind of a stretch, but could this upside-down dimension be some sort of in-between world that the Demogorgon isn't from per se, but must use to travel to our world? Could the Demogorgon's homeworld be someplace deep underwater? I don't see eyes on that thing. Could the first season feature the small one and the large one we see in the second season promos be like Godzilla and the company that comes out of the deep ocean?
It's an interesting theory.
Yeah, kind of like... is that the Upside Down's not their home world. We talked about that the podcast, that like it doesn't make sense, but it could be the way to get to our home world in a similar way that the all black liquid covered thing that you know, construct the L used to travel there. Like that's the Earth version of the Upside Down from the Demogorgon's perspective.
Right, because we have no insight, I guess, into the Upside Down.
Possibly.
Like we've never been there, so we wouldn't know. She wouldn't know what it looks like,
right,
or something, but they have been to our world.
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting. And I kind of like the idea because you look at the monster in season two, the one we've seen, that Cthulhu-esque sky spider thing. It has very fluid movement.
It does.
Almost like it, a squid or an octopus or something underwater, right?
Right. And there is kind of like, there's a scene where there's like the kids are being chased down in maybe an upside down version of the high school hallway, or maybe it's the Upside Down is kind of, you know, how they colonize our real world, like there's slime and shit covering it, but there's like this smoky tendril of fog that's kind of like chasing them through. So I wonder if like it even has a physical form.
Yeah, if it's possible. I think it'd be interesting to see some kind of creature, and I don't think they're going to do this in season two, but it just struck me, that kind of swims through our atmosphere in the way that we swim through water.
Right.
Like, the place that it's from is so much more dense or whatever. I guess it might be the opposite way. The opposite. It's so much less dense.
Yes.
That when it comes to our world, it sort of swims through our air. I think that'd be cool.
We just have to wait for it to tucker out and it'll just float to the top of our atmosphere and be gone.
There you go.
No, that's kind of neat because that starts me thinking of, like, you know, one of the plot points of Clark's 2001-2010 series is that there's intelligent life in the upper atmospheres of Jupiter. Like these vast kind of like oceanic creatures that, because of the density and the buoyancy involved, that they float through the atmosphere the way, you know, creatures on Earth float through the ocean. And it's a neat thought.
I've never seen it like represented that way on screen for anything. That could be cool.
Totally.
Season three. There you go, Duffers.
There you go. Set it on Jupiter. Yep. Get the monoliths going.
The kids somehow last starfighter themselves there. I don't know.
Yep. They're going to be trapped in the cockpit with a gung-ho iguana. Yeah, no, that's an interesting theory. That like the Upside Down is kind of their what do they call that in the Matrix? The loading, the
construct, I think.
The construct that they load everything into. It's an airlock kind of world between theirs and ours. It's not necessarily their world.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to get more description of the other side of this, or the Upside Down is, if we're going to get more explanation and detail on it.
You know, as the podcast dedicated lore horror, I want as many and in-depth, I'll even accept it in the form of like, a technical guide, or like
grimoire cards that you have to buy, packs of at Walmart.
Yeah. Like, do you remember back? That was a very 80s thing. Like every movie had like trading cards. Like
that's
I had
true.
This Star Wars trading card collection where you'd have little bios and they'd have like, you know, a picture of Dagobah and they'd tell you a little bit about it. I would buy the shit out of that. I'd buy the shit out of a magazine. I'd subscribe to a newsletter. Like I want to know as much as they want to tell us about the world behind Stranger Things. I have a feeling
it being a horror, essentially a horror series, would ruin some of the mystery.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
The suspense, I guess.
That's what I was thinking.
Like, understanding them more.
I noticed that myself, that like I just recently watched Stephen King's It, and the monster immediately became less scary when the kids started figuring it out and kicking its ass.
Yeah.
Because
that's like, always the case.
Yeah, and like you have to do that to tell the end of the story, but you're right, the more a mysterious, and I've been on a horror movie kick, and like that seems like a common trend. By the time you start resolving things, the monster's no longer scary.
Yeah, it just becomes familiar.
Yeah.
Like this thing to deal with that's hard to deal with, but like not as uncomfortable. You know?
Right. Because I noticed that, like, I was watching It Follows, The Descent, shit, even stuff like Jaws. Like, Jaws is fucking scary the first two-thirds, but then by the time they're at the end of the boat and you're seeing, like, this big, fakey, mechanical shark up close, it's just like, okay, now it's just, I'm still interested, engaged in the stories and see how it works out, but the terror is gone.
Yeah.
Because your imagine, you know, there's nothing more terrifying than what your imagination can paint.
And I mean, it might be too early to reveal too much. Oh yeah, about like, it. You know, they're I've talking heard about 4 or 5 seasons on
right,
this thing. Yeah,
right. So I wouldn't expect. I mean, that's always a balance, because if they keep stringing us along and building up bigger and bigger mysteries with no answers or no closure at all, then it becomes kind of like a lost X-Files kind of thing.
Right.
There's a way, and that's one of the things I admire so much about The Leftovers, is they had a way of essentially summing up a season in a satisfying way, mm-hmm. while still leaving larger mysteries that could be explored later. And I feel like season one of Stranger Things did that very well. Like they didn't end on a cliffhanger of whether we're going to rescue Will Byers.
Yeah,
they resolved the season one plots, but then they also gave you a little hook of like, oh, there might be something. There's still something going on.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard talk in an interview. I heard the Duffers say that they were writing to things that maybe lent themselves to more seasons, as opposed to, you know, this tight story that they had for season one, because they mm-hmm. didn't even know if they'd get a season two.
Right.
Which might be worrisome, but, you know, I have a lot of faith in them to be able to pull it off.
But see, I think horror movies, and I think we talked about this too, they have that out where you can hint at a sequel and not have to go, like, not have to satisfy right. that, because that's part of the essential, it's not over yet. You should be afraid in your bed because the monster's not yeah. truly vanquished. So season five could go out on a victorious note for these children and the town.
For sure.
But then also allude that there's maybe even a more horrifying mystery that they don't even know about, that was something we can freak out about.
Yeah.
With a 4 to 5 season arc, I also worry about the children. Like, they're essentially mm-hmm. with the child cast, you are committed to essentially coming back and a year has elapsed. Mm-hmm. And what kind of phenomenon, like, only manifests itself every year? Like, I mean,
right. Once a year on a holiday.
Yeah. Like if it's a supernatural thing, like Halloween or Friday the 13th, and that's but they're not really going for that. So it's yeah. like they've got this thing where, like, they have to have a year between seasons. The kids are going to age, mm-hmm. And they should age. But, like, storytelling wise, why are we only getting this 1-2 to 3 week window into these kids' lives every year? If Hawkins is under constant psychic and you know, otherworldly attack.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess it's something I'm willing to overlook just because of the logistics of filming.
But
you know?
Me too. Just like the Game of Thrones, we talk about how, like, you're supposed to simultaneously hold the conflicting notion that these children have only aged a few years, but then also yeah. the fact that they're also, like, clearly adults now. Mm-hmm.
I guess the only way to address it is to skip a year between seasons.
Yeah.
Like, say, okay, yes, there's this artifice that this thing comes back once a year, but that's because mm-hmm. we get these kids who are aging at the rate that they're aging.
Or, I mean, there could be a cool science explanation, like the portal only is weak when this Earth is in a certain position in relation to the solar system.
Right.
Like, they could, like, yeah. like I've said, what I was getting at is I'm ready to go with whatever ass grab they got because I love the show so much, but they'll get extra bonus respect points if they can come up with an in-universe explanation for why we get these occasional glimpses into these people's lives.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that could be cool. I could see them at the end of the series making the final season lean a lot more heavily on, like, the tropes of Cabin in the Woods kind of stuff, you know, where like the teenagers go out to party because they'll be that age by then, right? Like 18, 19, some of these kids. So I don't know. That could be interesting.
The other thing is
take on those tropes in the final season.
The other thing they could do is similar to, like, Stephen King's It. They have this thing where, like, this happens to children, and then they flash forward, and now these people are adults, and it's some indeterminate time in the future, and there's some cyclical thing happening, but they're the same characters, but now they're the adult versions. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I love these kids, I think it would be cool to explore what the 20-something Mike, Lucas, Dustin, and Will are doing. And, like, yeah. you know, what does 11 look like when she hits 30?
Okay.
You know, and
exactly
she's lived,
like,
this crazy... Well, I mean, yeah, you could do a lot of interesting things with that. And, again, I love the character. I actually really like, you know, the character of Hopper and Joyce, but is it the story about them? Is it the story about the kids? And is it essentially about the kids? And like, that'd also be an interesting way to look back fondly at other periods of time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, now we're looking at the 90s or...
Yeah.
I don't know. The show seems like...
They could do another series on that.
Show do, like, does seem like series. It's does something essentially... It'd be like, yeah, if Walt and Skyler had picked up from New Mexico in season 3 and moved to New Jersey... You still could have told that show, but like arguably Albuquerque, New Mexico is as part of Breaking Bad as Walter and Skyler. And I feel like right. the '80s and that Steven Spielberg, Stephen King esque kind of horror, science fiction, coming of age entertainment is in this show's DNA.
Yeah.
So maybe it wouldn't be as easy to do that.
It'd be interesting if they really leaned into the ideas that people had of Dungeons and Dragons in the '80s, and it turned out like them playing the campaigns was
right.
the thing that brought
yeah.
the Upside Down
their minds
to the
made
real
world. It real.
Right.
Right. You've dabbled in arts.
My parents
you don't
thought
understand.
That was gonna happen.
Shit, yeah, mine too.
They thought, oh, I crack open a D&D
unironically
master's guide and I'm fucked.
Unironically thought watching The Exorcist would bring demons into the house.
Yeah.
Because that's how that works.
The other thing is there's going to be a lot more cursing in this season.
I thought that was interesting that I read an article where the kids themselves were like, yeah. This is stupid. This is how we all talk. This is how children have talked from time immemorial.
It's true.
Go back and watch the Goonies. They're all foul-mouthed little punks, and that's what made it the seem so real. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Like, it's... I didn't feel like the kids didn't cuss in the first season.
No, they did, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, didn't Dustin say, like, yeah, our friend's fucking crazy and she'll kill? And I know he uh-huh. used the term asshole because...
And he said shit and holy shit all the time.
Yeah. So, like, you know, it's going to be interesting because my son's having a sleepover at another kid's house this weekend. And uh-huh. one of the things they're setting out to do is marathoning Stranger Things.
Ah, nice.
And I'm like, this will be an interesting test for that mom. Like, is she going to... She's thinking that... Because that's the thing. Like, I felt like season one was pretty... You know, it's shocking. It was violent. It was scary. It had foul language in it. So surely she's not going to be like, if they just have two fucks instead of one, it's not going to be like, oh, kids can't watch this anymore.
Yeah, I just don't think
Topless, that might push the boundaries of good taste in our community
yeah.
with children. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. Topless. I mean, she had a bra on, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's what I'm saying. I don't. I'm saying like this was happening in season two.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean that's. Full 20 seconds of the previews, just topless Nancy.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting because I'm not sure the executives of the studios understood what they had on their hands exactly, because
right.
a lot of the pushback and a lot of the reason that they shopped this thing around forever and it never got picked up is because they felt like they were making a show for kids because the main characters were kids.
It's a
and
family
they didn't
show.
Want all this violence. Right. And I'm thinking that's not the point. You've missed it entirely. This is a show
right.
for adults about kids, about the kids they were.
I think it's a family show in that, like, I think 11 to 12-year-olds are appropriate audiences for
sure,
this.
Sure, but it's much more, like, the people who remember the 80s,
yeah,
the
yeah.
people who were that age in the
right.
80s, they know, like, that's who this show is for, really.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
And so, like, to say, oh, yeah, we don't want it because... It's violent or whatever is
uh-huh.
in my mind foolish, and you know 15 different studios or whatever refused to pick it up, and then Netflix came along and even they don't seem to quite understand it because they're trying to limit the cursing, and it's like it's not for kids necessarily.
Well, trying and failing because it didn't. It turns out they're not going to be able to limit it.
Yeah, and even the kids, you know, they're cursing.
Do you think that? And then that's the thing is the Duffer Brothers interview is like, if anything, we edit the like if you
yeah.
listen to these kids on set, it's like mildly horrifying what
uh-huh.
they're coming up with. One thing we speculated in the season one retrospective is how much are they going to push the love triangle between Jonathan and Nancy and Steve? It looks like they're going to push it.
It looks like it. Yeah.
Because Nancy's making this wry observations, like, how come we only hang out when the world's ending or whatever? And she's
yeah.
wearing a little nightie, and they're doing the, like, camping in her bedroom thing again. And
there's some scene where Steve looks disappointed in Nancy. He's walking away.
Right.
They're in kind
he's
of
going
to
go right back
school.
To the Nancy Wheeler's. He's climbing
yeah.
up the ladder, and the
he's
guy's
shaking
like.
Shaking up the, can, the rattle
he's,
cans.
He's rattling the paint can. He's just didn't learn his lesson from
I'll
season
one. I'll
do
it. I'll do it, Nancy.
Yeah, and they also, like, I feel like they're leaning back in, like, Steve even has some heroic moments in a trailer, like
yeah.
when he retrieves the baseball bats, and mm-hmm. So, like, I kind of, you know, it would be interesting to see a rather mature take on a teenage love triangle. Now, that would be wildly, because I don't know, I saw lots of love triangles in my high school, and they were anywhere, I would never describe them as mature.
No. And not in the movies either.
No,
certainly.
But it would be interesting to see kind of, I don't know, like, I'd go either way, like a realistic teen look at that, which I thought that season one kind of represented, or maybe an idealized version. Or,
you know, the only love triangle I can think of that I've ever seen that's done even remotely well.
And, Walking Dead.
And you're free to disagree with this if you don't think it's a love triangle, but Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Like
Cameron, I think, had a thing sort of for Matthew Broderick's girl, but I don't.
Of course,
like it was never like overtly expressed.
Yeah, it was a very Jesse's girl situation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay,
that's like the only relationship triangle that I can think of that's like that.
Like you know, I'm at specifically teenage.
Yeah, from that era.
Yeah, because like in a lot of them is more like, and I thought that's where Stranger Things was going to go, is like you've got the stereotypical bad guy who Molly Ringwald gets infatuated with, and then there's the good guy, and then like ultimately
by the end at the dance she decides,
yes,
this guy's an asshole, I'm going to go with Jonathan.
Right, and that didn't happen.
No.
And I thought that was like really cool, because again, like that's the thing, the Stranger Things sets, they have all these like expectations from these movies of the 80s, but they seem to like subvert. They use like a modern sensibility to subvert some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the kids kind of do it all by themselves, but like the reality is the kids would have been dead meat if it weren't for Eleven and her fantastic psychic powers. Like Lucas's, like they got me primed to believe Lucas's wrist rocket would kill the Demogorgon.
Yeah,
but of course it can't. But
right.
But Eleven with a head of steam can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like Nancy, like it's great. Like, so you see in like Nancy, Jonathan, and Steve triumph over the Demogorgon, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
And like Hopper and Joyce save Will, but only because of the distraction that the children and the government goons provided, or because they'd be cut to ribbons otherwise. Like it finds a way to thread the needle between paying homage to all these moments of children being triumphant and, you know, mm-hmm. getting away from the government goons and be like, no, that wouldn't really happen. But what can we do that would be a way to essentially tell that same story without betraying the realism? Like audiences are more sophisticated.
Not just subverting it to subvert it either,
right?
Like not just saying, okay, well, the 80s did this, let's go the opposite way. They're doing it much more intelligently.
Yeah, because like I feel like E.T. would not do well today. It'd be seen as way too saccharine, way too unrealistic, and Steven Spielberg would have it bristling with guns.
That's the thing, because Elle is essentially E.T.
Like, there'd be everything, like Steven Spielberg wouldn't have the courage to have guys chasing kids with guns, and they'd all be walkie-talkies, and all be safe and padded and smoothed over, and that's not real. And I like how this isn't a remake or reimagining. It's essentially playing out the same storylines, but now it's like, okay, audiences are a bit more sophisticated now.
Yeah.
So let's acknowledge that.
All right.
I've said my piece about my hopes and fears and dreams of season two now.
All right. Well, we're going to have a lot more to discuss come a week from now.
Yep.
Because the show, season two of the show, will be out and we will be covering it wall to wall that weekend. So look for it beginning on Friday. I'm not sure the exact time, but you'll know.
Again,
it'll pop up in your feed. Go subscribe to us on, you know, whatever podcast app you use, because you'll get it immediately.
And as you got a thought or opinion or a feeling, send it in to strangerthings@baldmove.com. We'll be considering those the week after the dust kind of settles. You can also, we'll have a thread for every episode in the forums on forums.baldmove.com. And if you want to keep up with our binge as it happens, follow us on social media, because that's the, you know, social media and baldmove.com is where these things are going to drop. And like, we're going to watch, record, release for several batches over that weekend.
And if you're excited about new Bald Move podcast, I guess we'll go leave us a review on iTunes for this one, because this is brand spanking new.
Yeah.
So we could use it.
Yeah, there's a lot of great podcasts that kind of got in at the ground floor.
Yeah.
We're coming in at second floor, like our buddy Jason over there at Podcastica's got one of them, and we're trying to kick his ass. So,
right, yeah. he's the mic to our Lucas.
Right. Right. You know, who's going to shake hands first? We'll see. But we need the iTunes reviews and the ratings and subscriptions.
Yeah.
So we can get it out there.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody. We will see you Friday, October 27th, the scariest day of the year now. Halloween's got nothing. We'll see you then.
All right. See ya.